The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. I'm actually in the studio with my co-host from the Casual Friday show. Elisa Profumo is doing the first hour of the show with me. How are you doing, Elisa?
Hey, Carl. How are you?
Good. And the reason that she's on is because she's going to be speaking about some of the things that we're talking about the first hour of the show. The first hour of the show, we're going to have David Wetzel from Green Pasture Products on. And then second half of this first hour, we're going to have Kenny Mattingly on. David's going to be talking about something I like to call supplements of biblical times. And Kenny's going to be talking about the threat to raw milk cheese is now being threatened. The second half of the show you're not going to want to miss. I'm going to have Dr. Scott Connolly on, one of the most intelligent men about nutrition in the world. And we're going to be taking the FDA to task today. I want the FDA to look at soy as a drug because it has drug-like effects once and for all. So you're not going to want to miss that second half of the show. That's going hand-in-hand in the challenge I made to Michelle Obama yesterday. If she really is interested in making this country healthy, to follow the plan that was set by Skidmore College. So that's going to be like a second part of that. Anyway, Elisa, the first interview we're going to be doing today, you actually have some information about this, and we're going to be talking with David Wetzel from Green Pasture Products. How you doing, David?
Oh, doing well. Thank you.
And the reason we're having you on the show is because I always become impressed when I see certain products being made with higher standards than just what is expected, let's say, from the marketplace today. And we did a show recently with Sally Fallon, Elisa, to promote vitamin A about cod liver oil. And you and I both started taking cod liver oil, right?
Right, right.
But what was the problem with the cod liver oil?
Well, I couldn't. The taste of it was horrible.
Right.
And plus, it just kind of repeated on me.
You kept burping it up.
Yes.
And you burped it up like for most of the day, right?
Oh, all day, right. All day. And I couldn't get past the taste. I just couldn't.
Okay. And so I got in touch with Sally Fallon, and she actually mentioned during that show a product called Blue Ice.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
And Sally said, you know, here's how you reach Dave Wetzel from Green Pastures. And we contacted David. We got some of his encapsulated cod liver oil, and you've been taking that now.
I have, and it's awesome. Okay. I love it. And, you know, one of the cool things about it is it's non-gelatin. It has beeswax.
Really?
Yes.
And so what's up with that, Dave? What made you decide to get away from gelatin capsules and go with beeswax?
All right, well, what we do, the capsules, it's a non-gelatin capsule, and it's made from plant cellulose. And on the inside, we put the cod liver oil, and sometimes with the butter oil, depending on the product, and we blend that with unbleached beeswax as a thickener. And that way, because we want to use a two-part capsule, so there's no heat during encapsulation, such as when you have a gel cap or a pearl. Those are all high heat and chemicals. We want to stay away from the chemicals and stay away from the heat.
Now you and I have a good friend in common, John Wood over at uswellnessmeats.com, and my audience knows who they are because that's where we get our grass-fed beef from. And he told me a story this morning that kind of coincided with something that Sally Fallon told me. Your cod liver oil is unique. Explain to my audience why the cod liver oil that you produce at Green Pastures is different than anything else that they'll ever find anywhere else.
Well, we make it without heat. We extract the oil through a fermentation process, the way it had been done throughout history. And that goes all the way back from biblical times, probably all the way to somewhere in the late 1800s is when we started to industrialize these fish oils. So we brought back and we make the product through a fermentation process.
Now explain that fermentation. What do you do with the cod's livers that causes this fermentation process?
Well, the fermentation is an enzymatic and bacterial breakdown of the liver. So it's basically, like I say, pre-digesting. And it pre-digests that liver and exposes the oil. And then we use that oil or pull that oil off to make the cod liver oil. It's a six-month process where industry will take the first step in processing any of these fish oils. They render. So they heat to about 200 degrees Fahrenheit to separate the oil from the bones from the meal. And then they will, all the fish oils go through further processing to clean up the problems from the rendering. So they'll molecular distill it and heat it to about 400 degrees Fahrenheit, give or take, and a variety of filters and things like that to clean up the problems from the rendering.
Now, John told me a story. How much cod liver do you buy from Scandinavia twice a year?
I don't know exact volumes, but it comes via rail car. I mean, we have to bring rail cars in.
it's like metric feet of this stuff, right? I mean, it's like big rail cars full of cod liver, right?
Yeah, because you don't get a whole lot of oil off the liver, so
you got to use a lot of livers to render a little bit of oil.
Yep.
And then you take that and you put it in what, a giant vat somewhere?
It would be in a vat, yes. We've put it in a vat and where it ferments for about 6 months. And then we pull it out and finish working it and ship it off for encapsulation or bottling.
Now Sally Fallon told me that there are other advantages to this fermentation process when we talk about cod liver. There are other active ingredients that are rendered into the cod liver oil that you wouldn't find in a traditionally produced cod liver oil. Is that correct?
Yes, when we say traditionally produced, I think the fermented cod liver is traditionally produced. The others I would call industrialized. The industrialized fish oils, when you heat it, you basically render the product without nutrients. So you end up with a clear, tasteless, odorless, flavorless product, but it's also, from my perspective, nutrientless. There's still fatty acids there, and that's why the industry talks about, EPA, DHA, and omega-3, because as a marketer, you always talk about what you have, not what you don't have. But when we ferment it, and this is a learning process, but there's thousands of nutrients in there. There's all sorts of forms of A and D and Ks and Es and other fat-soluble nutrients.
Now, do you add any synthetic nutrients back into the cod liver oil like many of the other cod liver oil manufacturers do?
No, we let nature hold what it is.
Okay. And so as a result, do you happen to know off the top of your head what the ratio of A to D is in your cod liver oil?
Well, if you want to go into the discussion of trying to define what A and D are, no, I don't focus on the ratio because I don't think we fully understand or have the ability to articulate what real vitamin A is all about, what real vitamin D is all about.
Are you saying because there may be multiple fractions of A and D like we know is in the case of E and we're only recognizing one of those fractions at this point?
That's correct. There's all sorts of fractions and metabolites. They're called metabolites. There's all sorts of different metabolites and they do different things. They're not all doing the same thing.
You know, that's interesting. You know, vitamin E, we now know that the tocotrienols are more effective than the tocopherols, but the tocopherols are all that has been focused on by mainstream supplement manufacturers for decades now.
My guess is that because it's easily obtainable. I think they just strip soy out, so there's a lot of those available, correct?
Right. Yeah. So that's the one that's more easily attainable. But now we know that the tocotrienols, pound for pound, have a much better, greater benefits when it comes to reducing the buildup of arterial plaque and endothelial health and blood flow and antioxidant value. Tocotrienols are much more powerful.
And I suspect that they're all important, that all these different metabolites play a role, and we just don't understand them. So such as you're finding that different vitamin E's do different things, I think that's the same with all these nutrients.
And so when you use the Blue Ice cod liver oil, you are actually getting all of these different fractions of A and D, not just the ones that seem to be focused on by the science du jour, so to speak.
I would agree with that. I think you're getting a full range, okay. Such as like vitamin. I don't know if you want to talk about vitamin D, such as real cod liver oil has high levels of D2, which is confusing for people. Because
okay, let's do this. We have to take a quick commercial break.
Yep.
When we come back, let's talk about D2, and then I have some questions about some of your other products. I was looking on your website. Those of you who are interested in learning more about David Wetzel's products, you can go to greenpasture.org. Green Pasture, and that's singular, not pasture, it's pasture.org. They've got a lot of really interesting stuff there. And this is a company that goes far beyond the call of duty when producing products. And I've been told that just till the end of the month, as a special offer to my listeners, if you use a coupon code, is that right, SHR,
yep.
David?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, if they use the SHR coupon code, you'll get 10% off their product prices. They are not a sponsor of Superhuman Radio. I hope someday they consider, so show them some love. We'll be right back.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Science's want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power block, the world's best dumbbell.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MaheLer.com. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Right now we're talking with David Wetzel from Green Pasture Products. Go to greenpasture.org to check them out. David makes products the way they were made in biblical times. Really? I mean, he goes the distance to make sure that the things that you're putting in your body are really good for you. So you should always patronize supplement companies that work that hard. And they're offering you a 10% discount just through the end of the month. If you use the coupon code SHR, you get 10% off anything. And, again, they're not a sponsor. They're just doing that because they want people to be introduced to their products. Okay. So tell me more about the fractions of vitamin D, David.
It was startling to me as we started this work. I picked up a book called The Vitamin D Handbook that showed there's like up to 3,000 known metabolites of vitamin D. And this book showed 947 of them. In cod liver oil, when we started testing, we found out that, and I've since found information that we've always known this, that vitamin D2 is one of the prominent sources of D in cod liver oil, in real cod liver oil. There's some D3 and other metabolites as well, but D2 is a predominant form.
So do you think that it's important? I mean, obviously nature seems to do things for a reason, and humans believe we're smarter than nature. You feel that the D2 is just as important as all the D3? That's all the rage right now?
I think we extract the D3 from lamb's wool, and we haven't been eating lamb's wool very long. I've developed an opinion after working with this for 2-3 years that right now we try to doctor or do medicine molecule by molecule, but I think it's probably more appropriate to doctor or to provide medicine generation by generation. In other words, we don't need to know what we've always known. We don't have to redefine in terms of trying to put it molecule by molecule, but rather you just do what's always been done.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you.
I did have a question. I was wondering what the skate liver oil is.
Skate liver oil, it's a cartilage fish. And I had when we started this work, I was working with a Russian fisherman, and he just told me I had to do it. And he didn't give me a choice. He couldn't even tell me why. He was broken English. He said, you have to do it. And we started the work, and my research, it's a cartilage fish. It cannot grow bone. We still don't understand how cartilage is formed. And we have used this skate liver oil in the past. I found references from about 1600 through 1900 of skate liver oil being used in a variety of societies. But I can't tell you molecule by molecule why it's important, but I can tell you it's special. And for some people, it is very, very special.
Now, is skate liver oil taken in as opposed to ELISA?
Am I taking the skate liver oil as opposed to the cod liver oil then? Is that what I should do?
Some people do it that way. Other people find that when they do muscle testing, when they're actually stronger taking the skate. We do three oils, skate, butter, and cod. And when they take all three of them together, there's some different things in there, different quinones, different hormones, different nutrients that just aren't in the other oils. And vice versa, there's other things in these other oils that aren't in the skate.
Well, I saw in here that it has a combination of A, D, E, and K, and then it also has squalene in it.
Yeah, squalene would be common, yes, and there's probably other things, oxycholglycerols and chondroitin and things like that.
Okay.
Squalene apparently is a precursor to cholesterol. And, I'm a big believer that this whole cholesterol thing is a myth. If you look back generations, our great-great-grandparents didn't give a hoot about cholesterol, and many of them lived into their eighth and ninth decade of life quite well without a pill.
Yep.
So, I know that squalene is a precursor to cholesterol. It's a precursor to steroid hormones like testosterone and estrogen, but more importantly, it's a precursor to D synthesis, vitamin D synthesis, while we're on the topic of vitamin D. Now, David, your cod liver oil comes mixed with butter oil. Is this raw, unpasteurized butter?
Well, it's butter oil, and pasteurization usually refers to proteins and sugars. There's no proteins or sugars in this. So, to answer your question, is that we do not heat that oil anytime during the process. And in the butter oil, it's called high vitamin butter oil, as Weston Price discovered back in the 30s. And the cows had to be eating a certain way. It has to do with the speed of the grass growth.
Is that what he referred to as the X factor? I remember reading something about butter oil and the X factor in one of the articles on Weston A. Price.
Yep. Yeah, he found it most prominent. X factor he found in of some other foods. He found it in some fish oils. He found it in some insects. But for our Western diet, it had to do with what he discovers high vitamin butter oil. And the X factor is the nutrient that he found that would allow your body to assimilate other nutrients. So it was an important factor to be able to get nutrients into your body, not just to consume them, but to get your body to utilize them.
Now, I also noticed that you do some other fun things with butter oils and butters. What is I know that you have raw coconut oil, which I'm a profound believer in. I eat raw coconut oil every day. I believe in saturated fats, especially from coconut because of the high MCT levels. But what is ghee? G-H-E-E. I see that on your website mixed with coconut oil.
That's also a dairy oil. And we make what's called a coconut ghee. And it's 75% coconut oil, 25% non-heated ghee. And that would be something that for some people, they'll like the flavor of that better than straight coconut oil when it comes to cooking. I know I do like my eggs. I don't like my eggs fried in coconut oil, but I do like it in the coconut ghee.
Well, I fried eggs in coconut oil for the better part of a year. I didn't mind it, but why don't you like them fried? Because of the coconut flavor?
My palate. I guess if I grew up in another part of the world, I probably would appreciate it, but growing up here, I like butter.
Okay. All right. That's a good make point.
So, since I don't like coconut, I might like the coconut ghee because it has more of a buttery taste.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Good.
And obviously, there's some health benefits to some of the fatty acids in there. So you get a wider range of fatty acids as well.
And those fatty acids we know are very, very important to the brain's function and the sense of well-being. We know that fatty acids lead to happy people. So and contrary to what the government is telling us, you know, they're telling us every day, cut back on your fats, cut back on saturated fats. We did a show with Dr. Michael Smith from Life Extension Foundation and showed that saturated fat is very good for you as long as you don't have high sugar intake in your diet. Once you have a high sugar intake, then saturated fats become bad.
Yep.
So it's very good. What other products do you have out there on your website that might interest my audience?
The common one right now, have you discussed the book, The 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss?
I just got a copy of that. Did you arrange for me to get that by any chance?
No, but it's a bestseller, and he discusses what's called Blue Ice Royal. So if you're a fan of Tim Ferriss and read his book, his Blue Ice Royal that he's referring to is a combination of the butter oil and cod oil.
As a matter of fact, I just received a copy of that book a week or so ago, and I have no idea who sent it to me. And I just started browsing through it. I am going to read it, and I'll see about having him on the show.
Very good.
Yeah. All right. So let's do this. I'm a big believer in cod liver oil now. I am a big believer that taking vitamin D in the absence of adequate vitamin A is not a smart thing to do. I've gotten the religion of that. I understand that vitamin A may be the quarterback that tells stem cells in your body what to become on demand when your body needs to repair organs and tissue. So not having adequate levels of vitamin A is not a wise thing as you age. And so now I'm a big believer in cod liver oil, and I'm a big believer in the cod liver oil from Green Pasture because of the method that they make it fermented, number one. Number two, the fact that they go to the extra expense of not using common gelatins to encapsulate it. It tastes good. It doesn't repeat on me, and it's easy for me to take. So I'm asking my audience, if you are a believer in cod liver oil, to go to greenpasture.org and check out their Blue Ice product. And if you decide to buy it, use the coupon code SHR, lowercase, and they'll give you 10% off. How's that sound? Sound good to you, David?
Yep, it's perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
How long have you guys been in business? Just curious.
It's a family business. Still is a family business. And we started up 10 years ago, but really within the last 5 or 6 is when we've delved into it just a little bit deeper. But
what made you decide to ferment your cod liver, to come up with a fermented cod liver oil? Why did you do that?
All right. That goes back to we were making the high vitamin butter oil. And it was two parts. It was Weston Price discovered the pinnacle of its discovery was combined butter oil and cod liver oil. And there was too many questions on the cod liver oil, so I went out and did quite a bit of research trying to figure out how they made cod liver oil, including going to some of the mills to see some of this. and I came back very distraught, as in the whole industry was highly industrialized, which I guess maybe I should have expected, but I was taken back with that. And I had many concerns about the direction, and even my own, if I have something, I have to totally believe in it. And I came to the conclusion that the only way I was going to be able to believe in it is if I did it myself. Because then I would know the truth, and that's the 2-minute version there. So we made the decision. We had to figure out a way to make it.
But why fermented? Where did you learn about fermented cod liver oil?
Okay, very good. So fermented, that's the way it's always been done. I mean, that's from the times when they were making fish oil in Roman times. The Roman soldier wouldn't march without their fermented fish oil. They didn't use necessarily cod livers, but they used other organs from the fish. And but you know, there's references from the Viking times that that's what they'd done. And through in Norway, there's many references that that whole industry has developed through that fermentation of the livers, or the fermentation of the other viscera. And then it wasn't until about 1850 when they discovered they could render these livers, and rather than wait 6 months for it, they could turn it in a day.
It's always about impatience, isn't it?
Well, it's industrialization. You know, I don't fault them for it. I mean, I know where they're going. I mean, they see the dollars, and they can turn it very quickly. I mean, but I don't think that's proper. Well, even the meat, John would tell you the same thing. You need to, just to grow them right, they need a little bit more time.
Yeah, right. And no one wants to give them that time anymore.
That's right.
No, you're right. All right. Well, listen, David, I want to thank you so much for coming on Supreme Radio, but more so, I want to thank you for being true to the code of ethics and producing such a great product.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your interest.
Okay. And go to greenpasture.org. Check out their products. If you see anything you like, use the coupon code SHR to get 10% off. That's only good through the end of February. There's only 28 days in this month, so take advantage of it. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the assault on raw, unpasteurized cheese products. Yes, not only are they trying to take our milk away, but now they're even going to try to take our raw, unpasteurized cheese products away from us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, M-A-H-L-E. Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net. Turinabol from primordialperformance.com is a halidrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at primordialperformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. When you take real performance enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com. Pre-work
workout products crank you up then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by bestrecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Sciences want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
How y'all feel out there?
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio.
Yeah.
As many of you know, I am a huge, huge proponent of raw, unpasteurized milk. I say get it however you can. It's the one thing in nature that was actually made to be a food. And especially after the information we spread from Skidmore College yesterday showing that just 60 grams of whey protein a day causes people to lose body fat regardless of whether they exercise or change their eating habits. So whey protein is in milk. Well, one of the things that has not been assaulted in the past is the production of cheese products from raw unpasteurized milk. And my guest at this half hour is Kenny Mattingly from Kenny's Cheeses. How you doing, Kenny?
Doing good today. How are you?
Good, good. And you happen to be a Kentucky-born product that I have some familiarity with. Alisa, you actually turned me on to Kenny's Cheeses, right?
I did, yes.
Why?
Because I love it. That's all I eat.
Thank you.
Sure.
Now, what? Just out of curiosity, I've never paid attention to whether cheeses came from raw milk, and you know I'm a big proponent of raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you like Kenny's Cheeses?
Well, besides that it's from raw milk, the flavor, the taste, the freshness, it's there. I got turned on to it actually at a farmer's market, and the flavors, all the different types they have, like the tomato basil.
Is that one of your favorites?
That's one of my favorites.
Okay.
But it's really good.
So for all these years, Kenny, raw cheeses have been allowed to use unpasteurized milk as their main ingredient. How long does that date back to?
Probably since the beginning of cheese.
Okay. How did cheese get under the radar of the whole pasteurization process?
Some information that I've received, that was an article in the New York Times that talks about that about the 1940s, because of typhoid, they started requiring a 60-day aging of raw milk cheese, thinking that the aging would allow the acid to rise in the cheese enough to where some of the pathogens couldn't live there. Pasteurization started, I believe, during the 50s, because milk was coming in from so many different farms and was being contaminated.
I got to correct you there. The reason for pasteurization, as detailed in Dr. Ron Schmidt's book, The Untold Story of Milk, is because the distilleries decided to get into the milk business, and they made swill milk and killed 1,100 people in a one-week period of time.
Wow.
It wasn't the farmers. It was the distilleries who said, you know, we've got all this mash left over. Let's buy cows, feed them the mash. We already have bottling. Let's bottle milk. We're in the city. The farmers outside the city. We can take advantage of the milk business, and they killed people. And, of course, in the government's divine wisdom, instead of telling the distilleries, which had lots of money, get out of the milk business, they decided to let them pasteurize milk and change forever what would be the single best food ever known to humans to a dead version of a food. And that is where these poor farmers ended up being crushed. But That's really why pasteurization came about. But go ahead. So even when pasteurization came about, no one said cheese had to be from pasteurized milk because the aging process they felt killed the pathogens, right?
Right. It was like a natural pasteurization of more or less that 60 days.
But that's all changing now, isn't it?
Well, it seems to be. The FDA is visiting a lot more farmstead cheese facilities and closing a lot more down.
And what are they citing as the reason for closing them down, Kenny?
They claim to be finding listeria in the facility. No one's getting sick from the cheese necessarily, but they're finding listeria in drains or whatever, and which can be harmful, I think, to pregnant women. So that's what they're looking for, mainly.
But isn't this interesting? I want to go back to you casually said something, and we kind of glossed over it. No one is getting sick from the cheese, but they're finding something in the plant. Well, for crying out loud, I'm sure that you could find things in plants that handle pasteurized milk if you look hard enough.
Most cases of someone getting sick from cheese is post-pasteurization.
Yeah, exactly. My point. I'm glad
now
you
said
it.
There has been some cases of people getting sick from E. coli, but that was from cheese that wasn't aged properly. Most of that was like from fresh Hispanic style cheeses.
What do you mean Hispanic style cheeses?
Well, like queso fresco or queso blanca cheeses that are consumed right after
they're
the
produced.
Day after.
Right. Okay.
But they don't know the source of the milk either. So
right. Okay. So the bottom line is now all of a sudden there's an assault, and is the FDA trying to move to forcing companies to produce pasteurized cheeses only?
Well, I mean, that's where the discussion lies. It's the articles I've read, you know, some suggest that just across the board pasteurization. Some are recommending 90 days aging. Some are recommending that we mandatory pasteurization of soft cheeses like your Brie's or some of the Blues. So there's a lot of discussion debate over that right now.
You know, I see this frankly, as the same thing that's going on in the milk industry. I mean, the milk industry has been fighting feverishly to put the couple handful of farmers who still sell unpasteurized milk through cow share programs out of business. And I feel like these Renaissance-type artisan cheesemakers like yourself somehow they feel that, you know, that's a piece of cheese that we're not selling. And the only thing that differentiates us from you is you're using unpasteurized milk. So we're going to force the government to put you guys out of business because they don't want to leave not a single morsel of revenue or business for the small family farm. They just don't. It's really disgusting.
I think that's a big part of it. And we sell about half our milk goes to our cheese production. Half of it goes to a family that near us that bottles milk, and they do low pasteurization, 150 degrees, and they don't homogenize it, which I think homogenization destroys milk more than pasteurization, in my opinion. But it's not so much that we're taking their revenue. It's when our product goes on the shelf next to theirs, their product is revealed as being less lower quality.
Right.
You know, the consumer knows that. When they see a raw milk cheese right from the farm, they know that's superior. Most the consumers that are in the marketplaces where we sell to.
Well, anyone who's in the know. I mean, anyone who's paying attention to the disease debacle here in the United States knows that minimally processed is the way to go. The less you do to a food, the less it's denatured. And the key word there is denatured. We were just talking a minute ago with David Wetzel about fermented cod liver oil from fermented cod's livers, and it's more natural that way than the way they make cod liver oil in commercial plants. Well, here comes the train again. People keep thinking that we're smarter than nature, that we know better than nature.
Yeah, you know? We've been transitioning our farm to organic practices for a few years now, and I've been kind of hanging out with some Amish farmers that are organically certified in our state, and it's amazing. You know, they farm taking a position of observing nature and working with it, because nature does the right thing. And what I've been taught for 30 years of farming is everything's messed up and we need to get something to knock it back into shape, like chemicals or equipment. Or so it's been kind of a relief, you know, knowing that you can work with it, not trying to control things, you know.
What would happen, what would happen to your business if you were forced to go to pasteurized milk products? First of all, let's talk about this. What would happen to the quality of your product? Do you think it would be impacted?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So does using pasteurized milk change the way you would have to actually make cheese?
Well, yeah. Instead of, number one, we made probably 80-some thousand pounds of cheese last year, all raw milk, small batch, 300 gallons to a vat. And I only used probably maybe 500 to 600 gallons of propane to make that cheese, because the cows are bringing the warm milk to my cheese vat. I make the cheese directly after milking. While the cows are being milked, it's being pumped into the cheese vat. So that's one factor. It raised my cost of production by having to heat all that milk up to 150 to 180 degrees and cooling it back down. So just the energy expense would be probably multiplied 3 or 4 times. And plus cost of pasteurizer. You know, pasteurizer is between $10,000 and $50,000. And I just don't think our market would have grown like we've seen it grow the last 12 years if we weren't making it.
Well, let's ask a devotee of Kenny's Cheese. Do you think you'd buy it if it was from pasteurized milk?
No.
You wouldn't?
No, I wouldn't.
Right.
No. That's why I buy it, because it's not.
Right. So there you go. So basically what's happening is the FDA is trying to tell you, Kenny, we don't really want you to be in the cheese business. And the reason we don't want you to be in the cheese business is because the companies that make Kraft and all these other products, they're the ones that deserve to be in the cheese business. I mean, it's a sad, sad situation. You know, Elisa, you were showing me an article this morning that we were actually going to delve into on the Friday show. But right now, dairy farmers in Kentucky actually have a class action lawsuit against Dean Foods and a variety of others.
Right.
Why?
Because they're trying to put them out of business.
They've artificially lowered the price on milk.
Right.
So these poor farmers are probably getting, what, 60 cents a gallon, let's say. I mean, let's see. Who knows what it is? I don't even know. You have any ideas on what these farmers get paid for a gallon of milk when they sell commercial milk to a commercial dairy, Kenny?
Right now, it's the price has gone up the last month or so a little bit. I think it correlates with the grain prices, and grains went up 30-40%. But right now, if I was to sell a raw milk just on, you know, to a co-op or the open market, we're probably getting about $1.20 a gallon.
So is that a guy who is a dairy farmer and he has a big truck and he takes his milk to a company that pasteurizes and then bottles it and sells it to Kroger's? They're giving him $1 a gallon, you think?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit above that right now. That was about the price most of last year.
Now, if any of you farmers who happen to tune into this show today, think about this. Feed your cows grass only. Get rid of the hormones and get rid of the antibiotics, because you won't need antibiotics if feeding grass is. There's no mastitis. And sell your milk through a cow share program for $10 a gallon. Have fewer cows, make more money, and make people healthy at the same time. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Kenny Mattingly from Kenny's. What's the website, Elisa? Is it Kenny's Farm Cheese? Well, hold on a second. What's your website, Kenny?
It's kennyscheese.com.
Kennyscheese.com. Do you ship anywhere?
Anywhere.
Okay.
In the United States.
Okay. So there you go. If you don't have access to raw milk cheese products, go to kennyscheese.com and check them out. We'll be right back. When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscle's N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at NeedToBuildMuscle.com. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. Pre-workout products crank you up, then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
For no other reason.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking right now with Kenny Mattingly about the changes that are trying to be forced on cheese makers who use raw unpasteurized milk. A little later in the show, we're going to have Dr. Scott Connolly on, and I am going to challenge the FDA today. I want the FDA to start treating soy like a drug, and I'm going to make a case for it. I'm not smart enough. I'm going to ask questions to a guy who is smart enough. And he's going to help me assemble my thoughts. But I say the FDA needs to step up and treat soy like a drug, because it has drug-like effects. Kenny Mattingly, we're back with you talking about cheese making. Alisa, you had a question for Kenny, didn't you?
I did. My father was a farmer, so I know how hard farmers work. I just wanted you to give everybody a snapshot of what your day is like. I think I read on your website that you're milking the cows by 4 a.m. and that you're making cheese by 6 p.m. Did I read that right?
That's what happens 7 days a week. No, six days on the cheese, but 7 days milking the cows, yes.
I don't think people realize that cows need to be milked twice a day, don't they?
Yes, they. Some farms are milking as much as 3 and 4 times a day, but we like milking twice a day because it we think it keeps the cows healthy and gives them plenty of time to rest in between milkings.
And isn't it true that the cows get so accustomed to being milked that they'll actually walk to the milking barn when it's time to be milked?
Yeah, their clock goes off to to get milked. Give me some relief here.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that with my own eyes. It was the most surprising thing I've ever seen. So, Kenny, you're actually milking at 4 a.m.
Yeah, I've kind of, my son stepped into the, taking care of the farm for me. So he's 23 years old. He has a passion for dairy farming like I've had, my dad had. So I've kind of learned to get out of his way and let him take care of it. He's got a couple men that help him but they take care of the milking and feeding. I don't think I've milked a cow in a couple weeks now.
Oh, just a couple weeks. You feel like you're on vacation,
yeah,
don't you?
I am. Well, the cheese business has grown quite a bit, so I need to be spending time there anyway. And I've been the cheese maker primarily for, well, my mom and dad stepped away from it. They were the first cheese makers for a couple years, and I've been making and have had people help me. Now I've got a young couple that makes during the morning milking, and then my son and I make about three evenings a week.
So theoretically, somebody is up there milking cows at 4 a.m. in the morning, and what time is the job done in the evening? What time do you call it a night, go in, have dinner, and go to sleep?
Well, the farm activity starts at 4 in the morning and usually wraps up by 7. When we make cheese in the evenings, we're getting done about 10:30, 11 at night.
So now think about this for a second. We have people out there who are complaining because they have to work on the weekends. You know what? I happen to understand this because as a young man, I had an opportunity to work with thoroughbred racehorses. And Christmas and New Year's and all those days that everybody takes off, animals have to be fed and their stalls have to be cleaned and things have to be done. So there are no days off in animal husbandry at all.
Right.
So,
it's just for a dairy farmer, your average week is 80 hours. I mean, that's average.
Yeah. And now, obviously I have to ask you the $64,000 question. Do you drink your own milk? Do you drink raw unpasteurized milk?
That's all we've drank for 34 years.
Were you raised on it as a child?
I was, and I grew up in the suburbs of Indianapolis. My dad always had a love for farming, and he finally moved us to this farm when I was 19 and found my passion for dairy farming when we moved here. And I think he moved us here to keep us out of prison because me and my brother were in so much trouble in high school. But that's all we fed our three children is the raw milk. We'd bring a gallon home. I'd skim the cream off for my coffee and oatmeal and stuff, and they'd chug down the rest of it. And I'm thankful to say all my kids are healthy without allergies and strong bones. And
bingo. That's what I was going for. I was waiting for that. I was going to say to you, when your kids went to school, did they get all the seasonal sicknesses that all their friends did?
No, no.
That's
and my son, he will hardly ever drink store-bought milk. He just can't. He can't take it.
It has an aluminum. It has a metallic taste to it. Once you drink raw milk, you cannot drink pasteurized milk ever again.
No. And that's what people are finding with this, the JD Country milk that we sell part of our milk to this other family that does the low pasteurization and in glass jugs. And their market is
We saw them. I think we saw them in Whole Foods, actually.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And when people are finding out what milk can taste like, it's just like they can't get enough.
Yeah, but you know what, Kenny? I'm happy that they're doing that, and I know that's as far as they can push the line, but I will not be satisfied until the government gets out of our way and allows people to choose and understands that the people have the intelligence to choose. In most cases, we're more intelligent than the people that are overseeing and dictating these things to us. We should be able to choose. If I can pick up a cigarette that is known to kill 400,000 people a year and smoke it under the good guidance of this government who makes tax dollars on it, then I should be able to eat anything I want, and I should be able to drink raw unpasteurized milk, and this government should not be able to get in my way of it, period.
Well, that's the exact thing I told my milk inspector. I said, why can't a person choose what they want to eat? Or drink.
It's simple. It's simple.
It's not hurting someone else.
The answer is simple, Kenny, and here's the way it goes. Murder is okay in the United States. In fact, you can murder somebody and not go to jail in the United States, but you know what has to happen for that to happen? The government has to get their cut of the money. If you're paying taxes to murder people like tobacco, the government will say, sure, you can kill 400,000 people a year. No problem. Just make sure we get our tax dollars. So that's the answer. And the same thing is, and look, let's be honest. The dairy business is a huge business. When I drove from Phoenix to San Diego, I went past a dairy farm that's supposed to have 100,000 head
that they milk somewhere between Arizona and California. The smell was so strong for like 10 miles on the freeway, I couldn't breathe. It was just filthy. And I remember telling a friend of mine, he says, well, that's a dairy farm. That's a commercial dairy farm over there. They have 100,000 head there that they milk day in and day out. Those cows live 3 years if they're lucky. 3 years.
Oh, yeah. 1.5 lactation.
I mean, that's unbelievable. Now you take a grass-fed cow, that pastured cow, that a good family is milking like you are, they can live 8, 10, 13 years.
Oh, yeah. We've got them that old in our herd.
There you go.
And we're working through genetics and grazing and just other herdsman practices to even extend that further.
You have a question for Katie, don't you? Because we're coming to the end of the interview. You want to ask him something?
I just wanted to ask. I'm looking at your website at all the different flavors and different types of cheeses you have. They weren't available in this, like at Whole Foods, they didn't have all of these different flavors. So I can just order it from you over the internet. Is that correct?
That's right, yes.
One that caught my eye was the Havarti cranberry. Is that seasonal?
That is. We make it around make it for November and December, but we carry a little bit over. We still got a little bit of that left right now.
We better get on the website and order some then.
I love cranberries.
Because I have a funny feeling that my listeners may gobble that up on purpose before you can.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, some people can't believe a small cheesemaker makes so many varieties, but I get bored with the same thing. So I
was shocked when I saw all the varieties. I can't wait to try some of them.
Well, yeah. Good. And complain to Whole Foods for not carrying more varieties.
I will. Believe me.
There you go. There you go. Well, listen, Kenny, excuse me. I want to thank you for coming on and talking about the issue facing artesian cheesemakers right now who want to use raw unpasteurized milk. And what should people do? Do you think we should call our congressperson? What do we do?
Well, keep buying raw milk cheese, number one.
Right.
And I would say, yeah, be proactive as far as talking to your legislators, you know, and saying, hey, you've been reading this stuff. And because once they get laws passed, it's hard to undo them, you know. And so play ahead of the game there. And I would say just educate other people about it, you know, and get more people understanding the truth about real food and how much confidence they can have in this type of product. You know, I've been reading some of these articles and thinking, boy, you know, how concerned should I be? And I've never been to cheesemaking class. The reason I could make a quality cheese or look like a good cheesemaker is because the milk is such high quality.
The milk makes your job easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It does. And so why should they start convincing me that it's any different, you know?
And plus, to come full circle to what you said, that some of these guys that are inspecting have found listeria in a drain, but no one is getting sick from milk made from raw unpasteurized, cheese made from raw unpasteurized milk. And people are getting sick from cheeses that are made from pasteurized milk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you know
that's
what? Right. You know what? FDA, come on. We know what's going on. The people see it. We know.
Mm-hmm.
We see what you're doing. Stop it. Stop it. Leave these guys alone. Leave these small family farmers alone. Leave these artesian cheesemakers alone. We want access to these products, and you have no right to block our access. And you know what? Until the FDA starts blocking the things that are hurting people and are killing people, like the next show that I'm about to do with Dr. Scott Connolly, one of the most intelligent men in the world on nutrition. I mean, the federal government promotes soy. They promote it. Well, you know what? It's hurting people, and it has drug-like effects. Look, Kenny, give your website again.
It's kennyscheese.com.
Okay, I want my audience to go there, kennyscheese.com. Check it out. Buy a piece of cheese from Kenny. Keep the artesian cheesemakers alive. Don't let the government snuff them out. Kenny, thanks for being on the show today.
If you're ever in Kentucky, come see us.
Thanks, Kenny. There you go. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right, when we come back, we're going to have Dr. Scott Connolly on, and I am challenging the FDA. But first, I have to say goodbye to my co-host for the first hour, Elisa.
Bye.
Bye. We'll see you Friday, right?
Yes, yeah. Casual Friday.
Casual Friday. Tune in. We're going to have some good stuff. We're going to have Dr. Scott Connolly on in a minute, and I am challenging the FDA. I am challenging them to treat soy like a drug. That's what they're supposed to be doing. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Z100. Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels, but most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MAHLER.com. Finally, a Bulbine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bulbine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bulbine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPen technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbell.
If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Get brand, I call it, I still roadie. Rockstar, give me the beat and let me prove. London City forever, you know I still creep. Ain't no stopping me ever, you best move. Live, oh, yeah, I'll rip it.
My co-host for the first hour of the show, Elisa Profumo, as she was leaving just now, said to me, "Wow, you were yelling." I guess my voice was really coming down strong into her headset, and I was yelling at the end of the show, and I am yelling. I'm really, really pissed off. I'm pissed off at the FDA because they do nothing to protect people. And I want the FDA to treat soy like a drug, but I could not make a case for that because I'm not intelligent enough to make a case for that. But recently, I was producing a show for Dr. Scott Connolly. Dr. Connolly, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Great. Okay. And I produce, it's no mystery to the listeners, I produce the Body RX show for you, and we did a show. And first of all, I have to say something. The Body RX show is elevating intelligence. If you listen to the Body RX show, you cannot help but become more intelligent. Many of you may have to get a hold of a dictionary, but Dr. Connolly will force you to become more intelligent if you follow my direction. If you listen to the Body RX show and get the information that Dr. Connolly is laying down about nutrition and force yourself to learn some of the words if they baffle you, you will become more intelligent about nutrition as I have just sitting there producing the show. We did the show the other day and I slapped myself in the forehead and I said, "Oh my God, what the heck is the FDA doing? First of all, Dr. Connolly, the FDA actually promotes soy as being beneficial to people, don't they?
Yeah, actually, in excuse me, in 2006, there was a sort of blistering editorial published in the journal Circulation, a publication closely affiliated with the American Heart Association, where a critique of a 1999 regulatory statute. It's part of the, you know, CFRs. That basically stated that a consumptive level on average of 25 grams of soy protein was protective for cardiovascular disease. And the 2006 rebuttal from the American Heart Association group essentially was a comprehensive review of the evidence-based material that would speak to that, you know, claim, and found it, you know, completely lacking.
But the FDA still put their shoulder behind it, in other words.
Right. In 2007, in response specifically to that direct attack by the American Heart Association, the FDA announced that it was reviewing, the evidence for the recommendation, and hence the continuance of the recommendation itself. But as I said, that was initiated in 2010, and as of this date, as far as I know, there has been no further commentary by the FDA, nor any modification of the dietary claim.
Okay. Now, let's talk about something that I learned on your show that made – so I there were a couple things that you said on the last Body RX show that finally got it to me. It finally made sense to me. It really crystallized how damaging – and dangerous soy is. First of all, to clarify the misinformation about how Asian cultures eat so much soy, blah, 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 you spoke to the actual consumption of soy here and the guidelines that were set forth, or the recommendations that were set forth, and the average Asian person. Can you discuss that for a second?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the literature that, you know, is abundant that makes the, you know, implicit suggestion that because of the Asian intake and historical extent of Asian intake of soy foods and their low incidence of several chronic diseases, which are highly prevalent in Western societies, which do not, you know, regularly consume soy, that, you know, in essence, some magical formula was produced that said, you know, 25 grams is the sweet spot. Now, unfortunately, if you really review all of that literature, you quickly come to the conclusion that that level of soy isoflavone consumption is atypical for Asians. The reason being that Asian soy foods, the typical, you know, Asian soy consumption comes from traditional products like tofu, miso, tempeh, etc., which are not particularly enriched in the isoflavone component of soy, which is the so-called phytoestrogen active that is in soy products. And when you look at that specific input or intake variable, the Western intake without the addition of any kind of soy supplement is below typical Asian levels, but if you look at the 25 gram recommendation and the attendant isoflavone concentration, which would be typical in Western soy foods, remember, Western soy foods are not miso, et cetera. They're textured soy, et cetera, which is ubiquitous in the food supply. Those products are anomalous compared to the compositional attributes of the typical Asian foodstuffs, and thus deliver higher levels of isoflavone type compounds into the human body.
Okay.
And when you look at that metric, the typical, say, American female who is, you know, jazzed on soy, who uses soy milk and feeds her kid soy formula and eats textured vegetarian meat products with soy at 80% of, you know, of the weight of the product, their levels are higher.
higher than the Asians. So we can't look to the Asians. And plus, let's be honest about something else. The Asians have been eating soy much longer. There is some potential for polymorphisms. Maybe they metabolize soy differently. But even excluding that, they're not consuming the amount of the estrogenic compounds in their soy as we are here. Now, this is really critical that I want people to hold on to that thought for a second. I also want to mention that on the Casual Friday show, my co-host Elisa Profumo pointed out that recently Taco Bell was called on the carpet for only having 35% beef. And when you look at what the other things, they were textured vegetable proteins. Lots of fast food companies sell quote-unquote beef products that actually have high contents of textured vegetable proteins. Quite often, that TVP is predominantly soy because soy protein is a inexpensive protein source to and when prepared properly can have a mouthfeel like beef. So many of you were sitting here going, "Wow, I don't eat soy. It's a good thing I'm not eating soy." Guess what? You may very well be eating a lot more soy than you think you are. Would you agree with that statement, Dr. Connolly?
Well, yeah. In particular, when you see something that has textured vegetable protein in it, the average consumer can pretty much, you know, assume that 100% of that TVP is, in fact, soy. there is no other common commodity in a textured vegetable protein ingredient in the American food supply. And you're right. The problem with definitions of commonly consumed foods like ground beef, the compositional attributes of ground beef, which allow it to be called ground beef in marketing, are extremely broad based. And you're right. Most fast food places can sell, you know, two, you know, hamburg patty sandwiches for a buck because they're not, you know, constitutively composed of real meat. They're mostly soy.
Okay, so what we've just done in this first segment is this. We've identified the fallacy about soy consumption promoted by the FDA. We've challenged the idea that soy is healthy, which is also promoted by the FDA. We've identified that the Asian population that they like to hold up to us, who claim don't have some of the diseases we have, is not because of their soy consumption. And more importantly, we've set the stage for you to understand that even though you think you're not eating soy, there's a real good chance that you're eating a lot more than you think you are. Keep these in the back of your mind because this is really important as we move through this discussion. I am calling the FDA out on the carpet today. They must treat soy like a drug. And we're going to build a case when we come back. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. I have a genius on the air with me, Dr. Scott Connolly. He's making up for the fact that I know very little about what I'm talking about.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power block, the world's best dumbbell.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein and the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world: dimethazine, Superdrol, and Decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to IronMagLabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Get stronger, feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, Primordial Performance has their new Andro series available. You have to go to primordialperformance.com to learn more about it. The Andro series represents cutting edge in new bodybuilding products that build muscle without damaging your body. So check it out. Go to Primordial Performance today and check out their new Andro series products. My guest this hour is Dr. Scott Connolly, and we are taking on the FDA. It's time to start treating soy like a drug, because it is a drug. It has drug-like effects, and we're going to force you to see that today. Okay, Dr. Connolly, we've pretty much set the stage for the effects of soy and the misinformation promoted out there to promote soy, blah, blah, blah. There was something else that you said during the last Body RX show that hit me square in the forehead like a hammer, and that was this. Everybody's up in arms about bisphenol A and its endocrine disruptive abilities. Everybody's up in arms with phthalates and its potential anti-androgenic abilities, and it could be feminizing women. Everybody's talking about these things, and these are serious issues, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there's been growing public and actually governmental concern about the impact of what you're calling, what you just referred to, are phytoestrogens that are man-made, or they are what
I think
is,
I like to call them xenoestrogens. Yes.
Right. Xenoestrogens.
Right.
And these xenoestrogens have some attributes that are clearly not shared with plant-based phytoestrogens, the most important of which are the fact that they are not very biodegradable in the human digestive tract. So in essence, they not only exert their effects on a sort of in a postprandial window or in a transient way, they are stored mainly in adipose tissue for ungodly long periods of time and can be re-released from a warehouse depot of adipose tissue and do continuous damage over time. So a key difference between the environmental xenoestrogens and these phytoestrogens has to do primarily with their non-biodegradability and hence their storage for long periods of time, perhaps decades, in human tissues. However, another point of distinction is that despite the incongruous dissociation between the, you know, rapidly rising, you know, sort of alarm signal about these environmental estrogens, their actual binding as ligands to estrogen receptor alpha and beta and their ability to induce rapid, you know, metabolic effects through membrane-bound non-nuclear receptors is actually, you know, much less on a quantitative scale than the dietary phytoestrogens found in soy, genistein in particular.
I'm not that smart, okay? So what you're saying is that while these xenoestrogens have the ability to store themselves in fat and really affect us for a much longer term because our body doesn't necessarily get rid of them as quickly, they don't necessarily bind with the receptor as easily. While they're stored longer, they may not really produce the estrogenic effect that you would think once they are released into the bloodstream. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, at least at one level of analysis, you have to assume that when consumptive levels of dietary phytoestrogens produce levels in plasma of isoflavones that are at least an order of magnitude higher than typical levels of some environmental contaminants like BPA, for example, specifically BPA, and that the activity of genistein and related phytoestrogens on an immediate transient level as regard its ability to impact tissue functionality immediately post-exposure is higher with plant phytoestrogens than it is typically with things like DDT and PCB and BPA and all the other commonly, you know, discussed and xenoestrogens, then, you know, it gives one pause to, you know, sort of contemplate the logic that went into a sort of unfettered recommendation that has now become an official decree of the FDA that consuming 25 grams of soy without any clarification of the type of soy, its isoflavone content, any nuance with respect to age of administration, which I think is a critical variable here.
Bingo.
And gender is irresponsible in the extreme.
Okay, now that's where I want to go. So first of all, now what we've established is that if you're up in arms about potentially having BPA, phthalates, and all of these other xenoestrogens leached into your food and water, and you're one of these people that's going out and looking for BPA-free this and xenoestrogen-free that, but then you know that you're eating soy, whether it's in TVP in the hamburger that you just had or the taco you just had, or you elect to drink and use soy products and soy protein products, then you have to be equally up in arms if you know that A, the effectiveness of those phytoestrogens are stronger at binding to the receptor and causing the estrogenic effect, number one, and the abundance that you're getting is huge compared to what you're being exposed to in leaching plastics and so on and so forth. Would you agree with that statement, Dr. Connolly?
Yeah, the mere fact that the biology shows quite clearly that the binding, affinities of compounds like the genistein and daisdin in soy, are, you know, much higher than, you know, things like BPA should suggest at a minimum that these particular dietary constituents may pose a significantly underappreciated risk for untoward effects. And there are issues that make this even more emergent in terms of, you know, reevaluation than have been widely publicized.
What are those issues? Can you line them up?
They are basically that there are probably periods in the lifespan, both intrauterine and immediately postnatally, where some of these things can produce effects that may not be appreciated for decades. And just to kind of skew again to a direct comparison, when BPA, you know, was kind of first, you know, evaluated officially by the U.S. government, specifically the National Toxicology Program, when they first issued their safety assessment of BPA, it basically was given a rank scale of the number 2 on a scale from, you know, 1 to 5. That basically reflects incremental concern about the potential toxicity in exposure to one of these xenoestrogens. So again, you know, initially when BPA was, you know, evaluated, it was assigned this level 2. Well, now that's gone, you know, nuclear because of the concern with mounting evidence of what the potential for untoward effects from BPA are. You should know that in its most recent safety assessment of soy infant formula, soy infant formula was granted the same numerical designation, number 2, as BPA.
Wow.
And that's in the absence of any real substantive prospective go forward data based on human, you know, study evaluations. So the specter now exists, and it's quite real, that a current official national toxicology program safety assessment of 2 could go the historical route of BPA. And yet this dietary recommendation and all of the promulgations about the health benefits of soy continue in not only an unbridled fashion, but in, you know, sort of a hyper exuberant fashion. I think I mentioned on the Body RX show, when watching a Sarah Silverman, stand-up routine, she quipped that, you know, she'd been drinking like 4 soy chai latte espresso drinks a day, thinking that soy was healthy, only to find out that, you know, the fat and sugar content of those things put them at over 1,000 calories a serving. And, you know, she said, who knew? You know, it was soy. You know, the implication being that if it's soy, it's good for you.
Right.
And that's
right.
Quite true. And then the market data show that from the first year after the issuance of the FDA, you know, quote unquote, dietary recommendation, the proliferation of soy products, you know, geometrically expanded and has continued since that time.
Dr. Connolly.
The underlying assumption that if it's soy, it's healthy.
Right.
Well,
right.
I got news for you. That's just not warranted.
Well, we have 3 minutes before we go into the next break, and we can pick this up outside the break. I was just looking at a baby formula website while you were talking. It's a soy-based, the most popular soy-based baby formula website is Enfamil. And I was just looking at their website. I was trying to garner some nutritional information. Has anyone taken the time to quantify the amount of phytoestrogens that is in a single serving of baby formula?
Yeah, I mean, the soy content of the formula, the isoflavone content is obviously well known. But in addition, there is actually a lot of very valuable in vivo data about what the concentration of the formula produces in terms of a concentration in the baby's, you know, serum.
Really?
And one of the issues is, you know, the people don't kind of realize who are not scientifically trained is that the plasma concentration in an infant is, you know, exaggerated simply by virtue of their small body size. So when you look at something, you know, milligram per kilogram in a little tiny infant,
who's barely 3 kilograms. Right, because that baby is barely 3 kilograms, you know?
Right, like the Asian intake routinely produces an average in studies that have been published today about, you know, an intake of about, you know, at the upper limit, about 1 milligram per kilogram. That's the upper limit. You know, the range is like, I think, 0.3 to 1.2. But on average, soy infant formula produces intake levels of anywhere between 5 and 10 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. And like I said, when you translate that into an absolute serum or plasma concentration, it produces levels of up to 1,000 nanograms per milliliter, which is roughly 20,000 times higher than the baby's natural estrogen level.
That's exactly where I wanted to go for this commercial break. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about these poor babies who are being force-fed estrogenic compounds, and the FDA is sitting by and watching. They don't care. In fact, they're promoting this stuff. We're talking today with Dr. Scott Connolly. We're talking about soy. It's my opinion that soy needs to be treated like a drug. The FDA needs to get up and get busy. Either If they don't want to treat it like a drug, then they have to set out specific guidelines on who can use soy and how much they can ingest each day using the soy isoflavones and the estrogenic compounds as the predictor for consumption. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. I'm enraged. We'll be right back. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there is no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. Finally, a bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today. The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MahLer.com.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yeah! Throw your hands in the air right now, man.
That's Professor Axel.
Yo, crack the dawn.
Professor Axel.
Squad. Set my dick down.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My intelligence is on loan from Dr. Scott Connolly today. Because I am really pissed off. I really am pissed off. When this clicked with me, when this made sense to me, I thought to myself, here we go again. The FDA stands by as large companies produce products that hurt people. And not only do they stand by, but they openly promote these products, promote them as healthy on top of it. What is going on at the FDA? Okay, so Dr. Connolly, let me ask you this question. You said a moment ago that these babies who are drinking these formulas made from soy are effectively having plasma levels of estrogenic compounds, which have estrogenic effects running through their bodies that could be equivalent to 20,000 times what would normally be in their body. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, that's just one of the comparators that is relevant for the discussion. And again, it's because of the following facts: that total isoflavone content in soy formula tends, on as a just a general statement, to be much higher than most other food sources containing isoflavones. Now, that quantity can vary by, you know, a wide range depending on a lot of factors that have to do with even the nature of the soy that produced the formula in the first place. There's genetic differences between batches of soy that can translate into substantial differences in isoflavone content. But as a general truism, soy infant formula tends to contain higher content on a, you know, per milliliter basis of active, bioactive isoflavones than do other commonly distributed soy-containing foods and supplements. They are usually enriched specifically with soy protein isolate. And again, here's, you know, another comparator. I said, and it is correct, that at these consumptive levels, it can be up approaching 10 milligrams per kilogram per day. Because of their small size, those intake levels translate into plasma levels that can be up to 20,000 times higher than their own endogenous estrogen level, or some 100 times higher than an estradiol level in a pregnant woman. So, you know, basically, and even I think I remember one number that, you know, estrogen levels due to the surge in the follicular phase of a female cycle, that these levels in kids represent, I think, something like 3,000 times the average, you know, estrogen or estradiol levels at ovulation in an adult woman. Now, what's significant about this?
Yeah.
Well, it's significant in one very important respect. These levels are high enough to reproduce a lot of the different aberrant pathophysiologic effects observed in very carefully done animal studies and in human adult trials. They are, again, to emphasize, at least an order of magnitude higher than the levels of environmental toxins like BPA that have been shown to produce pathology in humans. There was a recent prospective study that looked at human infants that were fed soy-based infant formulas going forward. It's a prospective study. And those infants, when examined for the typical estrogenic types effects of these phytoestrogens, were found to have an enhanced vaginal or estrogenized vaginal epithelium at a chronological point in time when their breastfed and milk-fed control subjects did not.
So we're talking about
very clearly suggesting that these things have real biologic estrogenic effects, even in infants.
What about brain landscape, Dr. Connolly? What about young boys who are being fed soy-based formulas?
Well, again, like many studies that have been done to answer this question, the studies on males have been extremely uninformative and confusing because they share the general attribute of essentially looking at a very restricted range of outcome variables. And again, as we mentioned on the Body RX show, the sad history of the diethyl stilbestrol study clearly demonstrates that these prenatal and perinatal exposures can have effects that aren't discernible for decades. So small sample size, inadequate duration, very focused and narrow range of outcome variables have limited the usefulness of just about every, you know, human study that's tried to look at males. Now, what we know just from an aerial view of epidemiology, and this is undisputed, that coincident with the rapid, and I mean rapid, we're not talking about a gradual incremental increase in soy isoflavones over a long period of time. We're talking about the escalating levels of soy isoflavones occurring in a relatively circumscript period of time. And what has correlated with that in the United States and Europe, at least, are such things as, changes in the median age at which menarche occurs, precocious breast development, sexual precocity, all of these things, especially in the minority populations that tend to consume these kinds of, you know, products more frequently and more abundantly than wealthier populations. All of these things have been occurring contemporaneously with this advance. Now, that is not to say, you know, I'm not going to make the mistake of everybody else and assume causality. It does not say anything about causality. What it does is it gives a reasonable heuristic rationale for examining these issues more closely and perhaps, you know, withdrawing the health claim for these products until some of these things are more clearly defined. Clearly, it is true that when the epidemiology examines the Asian experience in which relatively low consumptive doses of basically traditional soy foods are examined in Asian populations, especially the Japanese, that those consumptive patterns are associated with relative absence of the chronic disease burden of Western nations. Now, to attribute that phenomenon, that epidemiologic phenomenon on their consumption of soy is ludicrous.
Right.
Because there are clear-cut differences just in the genetics of the ethnicity of those people. For example, we discussed on Body Rx that one of the considerations that may underwrite the tremendous variability in human responsiveness to these things is the fact that one of the potential bioactives is a compound called Equal, which is actually not contained in the soy phytoestrogen. It's basically produced by a specific action of a particular microbial species in the human intestine. Few people don't understand that most of the phytoestrogens are activated sort of as a second pass through the intestine. They're absorbed as inactive metabolites conjugated or stuck to a carbohydrate moiety. They're only activated when that carbohydrate moiety is released, producing what's called an aglycone form of the genistein. That happens by virtue of the fact that the inactive forms are secreted back into the intestine through the action of the liver and the gallbladder circuitry. And there in the intestinal lumen are acted upon by bacteria, which have enzymes called glucosidases, which cleave the carbohydrate moiety off, liberating a bioactive form that then gets absorbed. In the case of daidzin, the bioactive that is typically produced in a high proportion of Asian, you know, ethnic populations is a compound called Equal. In Western Caucasian groups, only about 30 to 50% of tested individuals produce this conversion and liberate Equal to be absorbed into the systemic circulation. So making
that's a protective mechanism that the Asians have.
Well, perhaps, but you know, the issue is that, you know, in essence, making dramatic comparisons about the purported benefits, and there may be several, okay, there may in fact be several benefits implicit in the consumption of traditional soy foods at levels of consumption which are typical for the Asian diet. Those are not consistent with the consumption of concentrated isoflavone-containing products like soy protein isolate, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
They're not equivalent.
Okay.
There are widespread differences in the temporal exposure because Asians don't feed their kid, their infant baby's soy formula.
Right.
They don't.
Okay. Now we're going to go into a commercial break, but I want to sum something up real quick, first of all. We're talking about neonates. We're talking about infant formula because it's terrible to torture a small child. Let's be clear about this to those who are listening. If you're using soy products, and you are, even though you may think you're not, if you're eating products that have TVP in them, so now start looking on labels of stuff that you eat for textured vegetable protein.
you are exposing your body to levels of estrogen that you don't want. Male infertility, erectile dysfunction are rampant in the United States today. There are a host of endocrine issues that are rampant in the United States today. People are worried about BP, bisphenol A, and phthalates and xenoestrogens. Well, guess what? You're getting a lot more estrogenic effects from the soy that's in your diet. But let me just crystallize this one thought with you for a second before we go into this break. If I had a young baby, if I had a baby that was under a year old, and I decided to take my girlfriend's hormone replacement cream, which let's say is 10% estrogen, estradiol, it's a bias, so it's, I think it's estriol and estradiol, and I decided to start rubbing 1 milliliter on the baby every day just because I wanted to, and Child Protective Services found out that I was rubbing a drug, now keep in mind this is a drug, controlled drug, on that baby every single day, and that controlled drug's only effect is to raise that baby's hormone levels, disrupt that baby's endocrine levels artificially, they would take that baby away from me. Dr. Connolly, I know you're not an authority in this area, but wouldn't you think that that would happen to a person? That wouldn't that be considered child abuse in some way if you were rubbing estrogen cream on an infant?
Well, obviously, it's akin to an illicit use of a pharmaceutical.
Okay.
I mean, it's like practicing medicine without a license.
Okay. So why aren't parents who are feeding their babies soy formula treated the same way? That is the question that I want all of you to ponder as we go into this last commercial break. But more importantly, I want the FDA to ponder it, because something has to be done. Soy could be causing so many problems for people out there that they just don't know. They just don't even know. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power block, the world's best dumbbell.
Finally, a Bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
Pre-workout products crank you up then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com. Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world:
dimethazine, Superdrol, and Decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to IronMagLabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Sciences want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from Bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at Bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, yesterday I made an open challenge to Michelle Obama that if she wanted to really change the health of this country, if she wanted to rid this country of degenerative disease, if she wanted to rid the country of obesity, they just had to follow the guidelines set up by Dr. Paul Arciero at Skidmore College. And that was to increase weight consumption, even in light of not changing any other aspect. Now, I know Dr. Connolly wants to cover a couple more things about soy, but I want to, the $64 million flipping question is, why do we have soy as a protein source when we have whey available as a protein source? But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. All right, Dr. Connolly, tell me more about the soy and infants, because I know there's a couple other comments that you wanted to make before we got into the approach of whey protein.
Yeah, I think that it's important, especially for all, you know, mothers or, you know, incipient mothers to understand that the indiscriminate recommendation of soy based on what is commonly, you know, thrown out as abundant evidence of their safety, and that is the lack of any really well-documented, you know, adverse effects, needs to be tempered with the following. It is very clear from animal trials that are well-conducted, well-controlled, and with animals whose lifespan is appropriately short enough to determine with some, you know, degree of predictive capability what the longer-term effects on reproductive tissue form and function might be, have clearly suggested that the levels which are commonly exceeded by human infants in terms of soy ingestion as formula in their neonatal life experience can produce widespread disruption not only of reproductive functionality and the associated tissue functionality that goes along with that, but keep in mind the estrogen receptor from an evolutionary perspective is thought to be the sort of primordial, you know, sort of grandfather of the nuclear receptor in all of evolutionary development of any life form, whether it be a unicellular organism or not. And as such, the estrogen receptor isoforms, alpha and beta, have just an absolutely unfathomable reach beyond reproductive functionality into virtually every aspect of organ and tissue function. Hence the pleiotropic benefit that has been proffered by many soy companies about it prevents heart disease, it prevents osteoporosis, it prevents Alzheimer's disease, it'll assuage menopausal symptoms, et cetera, et cetera. These are all owing to the fact that the estrogen receptor network as a signaling cascade in the body is ubiquitous. The liver contains a robust regulatory loop primarily controlled by the original estrogen receptor alpha, that feeds directly into the major pathways that the liver engages to pull off its preeminent role in energy balance. And the liver balances energy by virtue of the fact that it is the organ that supplies the ever required, always, you know, required.
Dr. C, Dr. C, we lost you for a second. You said the liver provides the ever required, and we lost you there. Could you repeat that?
Okay. The liver provides the ever required provision of glucose that is necessary to keep the brain alive.
Okay.
Although the brain can survive on 75% substrate derived from other sources, principally ketone bodies, there is an irreducible requirement that remains. If that is not provided, neuron viability has about a 4-minute window. And then when neurons go south for the winter, they don't come back. So in essence, nature regulates energy homeostasis, not by counting calories. Again, there is no mechanism extant in living organisms that registers the kilocalorie value of anything. What is registered is substrate availability. And because there is a threshold required for cell viability against the backdrop of an allocation specifically for glucose, that regulation is just inconceivably complex. The liver plays a preeminent role in this because it is one of the main sources of glucose when the diet doesn't provide it. So the presence and activity of estrogen receptor alpha signaling cascades in liver denotes that these things are incredibly important in a multitude of closely regulated and vitally important body functions. So the specter, that exposure in intrauterine life, and we know that these things cross the placenta, gain access right to the neonate in utero, exposure in utero and perinatally in the first, you know, months of life can have extremely high impact formative influences on not only reproductive tissues, but a whole host of estrogen dependent signaling cascades. And in recent studies demonstrate that the same rates of childhood obesity at age 6 to 8 are observed in infants exposed to environmental toxin, hexachlorobenzene, as are occurring with infants exposed to soy formula. Wow. So now we have another parameter of body function that can be adversely impacted by early life exposure. So the key message here is, phytoestrogens in moderate doses consumed from a variety of plant sources may in fact have many positive beneficial effects. One of the confounding variables in the Asian experience is obviously Asians' dietary profile. Macronutrient distribution is decidedly different on a evolutionary basis than is the typical Western diet. And soy consumption is just one of those differentials. They also consume, in general, many more plant-based products than Western cultures do.
Dr. Connolly, I want to make a couple points here. Number one, we've been talking a lot about babies and baby formulas, but isn't it true that consumption of phytoestrogens in adult women and adult men pose risks in and of themselves as well?
Well, that's less well documented than adult manifestations of early life exposure. For example, there's a study that has been out for a couple of years that's called the SISTER study. And it was originally, you know, put together to look at the occurrence of several different endocrine responsive neoplasms, one of which is a uterine leiomyoma or the fibroid deal.
Right.
And as a result of that data set, and it was an extremely robust study, it was essentially a population that included, I think, over 19 or 20,000 women, which makes it currently one of the largest, if not the largest, highly powered epidemiologic evaluations of various manipulations in early life on women's later reproductive health. And one of the metrics that they looked at was soy consumption as formula. And in that study, there was a clear elevated risk of developing these uterine fibroids that was associated very powerfully with infant exposure to soy-based formula. So again, going back to the diethyl stilbestrol lesson, and it's a big lesson, some of these things, when occurring early in utero or in perinatal exposure perspectives, can produce aberrant results that may not show up for decades. This is not an innocuous issue. It is not sufficient to rely on abstract statements made by health professionals who basically say, well, soy has been used for a long time and there's no consistent, you know, observation that it produces bad effects. Well, first of all, soy formula as an infant formula really dates back to only the 1960s. And its use as a soy, as a formula for infants has only recently accelerated, you know, largely fueled again by the preposterous association of a non-evidence-based FDA claim with the generalization to everything and anything in the marketplace that soy is
healthy.
Like Sarah Silverman says, obviously healthy.
Right.
So the exposure to these levels of consumption in the numbers of infants that would be required to show definitive effects, because of all the variables that we discussed, you know, obviously intestinal microflora activity, gender, ethnicity, blah, 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 all could possibly impact these numbers very significantly. And you need a large prospective cohort to even attempt to do that and get a realistic answer.
And years. We're talking about years
and years. That isn't available. Okay. So again, the original pitch for soy was, well, if you have cow's milk allergy, you should have this stuff.
Right.
Well, the actual incidence of cow's milk allergy is actually quite small.
Right. And now the consumption is not for that reason.
It's for, you know, abstract reasons that soy is healthy. Soy is healthier than dairy. And I would challenge, you know, anybody in a regulatory body to show me convincing data that any, and I emphasize any consumptive level of a dairy-based protein has produced in any scenario the kinds of damaging and sometimes lethal pathology associated with high levels of phytoestrogen intake.
And now we have access to whey isolate. So the whole idea of lactose intolerance we can isolate exclusively the whey from dairy products. Why are formula companies not offering a whey based formula as an alternative to soy?
Well, some are, obviously at the end of the day, the answer to a question about why a company does one thing versus another usually skews down to one thing, cost. Cost of goods is the central, you know, operating contingency for any successful company that skews in the general marketplace. It's price, 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 price. As I frequently said in public, you know, one of the most, you know, adverse consequences of the ability to cultivate or farm products and store them in a, you know, season independent, you know, manner and allow people to actually congregate in communities rather than being nomadic and following the seasonal availability of food in an almost, you know, tribal type nomad existence was the ability to cultivate. You raise something, it, you know, it matures and you can put it in your straw hut and keep it for when winter is and there's no more availability. Now, that's skewed to when your neighbor doesn't have enough of that particular material and you have excess, that becomes a value center for you, literally a profit center. You could trade it, you could sell it when currency became, you know, part of human existence, and you can monetize it. Well, you know, once that was clearly an opportunity to monetize edible foodstuffs, then the motivation to increase at an ever, you know, more powerful level, the nutritional value of those foodstuffs disappeared and it was replaced by an ever increasing attempt to get the cost of them down so you could maximize the benefit of selling them or trading them to somebody. And that's the problem with large nutrition companies, is people think, because of the advertising, that they have people staying up at night trying to figure out ways to make you healthier. That's not the truth. And basically, you know, this is a manifestation of it. How malignant it is, you know, is anybody's guess. My preference is to, you know, retreat to my position as what I consider to be an informed, you know, empirical science guy, and say that with respect to this claim, there's no evidence-based material to back that up. So there has to be another reason why it's still there. I don't know what that is. You know, I don't know if that's due to some nefarious lobby-driven, you know, agribusiness type pressure point or what. I don't know. I have not got that information. But the part of the message that is definitely not out there, because it's being drowned out by hyperbola and nonsense in the marketing about soy, is that, look, there is no question that at a certain level of intake, these things disrupt endocrine functionality. You cannot demonstrate that with a dairy-based protein.
Right.
So is there a downside potentially to soy, especially in critical periods of development, like in an infant? Yes, there is no question about that. What the absolute nuance of that is, what's the exposure, what's the duration, et cetera, remains to be determined. But since it remains to be determined, it should not be dismissed in any way as an irrelevant question.
Right. And you know what? I'm a much simpler guy. I'm not a science guy. And I come back to this statement that I made earlier. You would no more rub estrogen, transdermal estrogen cream prescribed for a woman for hormone replacement therapy on your infant. So why would you give your infant something that has a known estrogenic compound in it in such large quantities? It doesn't make any sense. I don't need to see an epidemiological study that is longitudinal for the next, you know, 60 years, where they follow people who are exclusively, exposed to soy products. And I don't need to see that. I know that it's not good. I know it's not good. There's no one that can tell me that a baby having 100 times the estrogen levels that it was supposed to have naturally is a good thing, any more than they can convince me that a baby having, pick anything, any other level, 100 times of what it's supposed to be naturally, it should be. So to me, soy is really not a good thing. And frankly, I feel that the FDA is derelict of its duties in not presenting some guidelines under which soy should be, can be consumed. Because you have people up in arms about BPA and phthalates. You have people up in arms about these things that are clearly endocrine disruptors. You have the mainstream media and Dr. Oz talking about bisphenol A. But you don't have Dr. Oz saying, but by the way, who cares about bisphenol A? You're probably consuming 1,000 times more endocrine disruptors just from the soy that you just had in that so-called beef patty that you ate at a fast food restaurant. So, hey, you know what? Let's not worry about the BPA. Let's just not even care about it, because we're doing much more damage to our bodies with soy. So the FDA needs to come forward, and they need to make some guidelines.
I'd like to jump in there, Carl. I think that, you know, the FDA needs to address, you know, a couple of realities. One is that the United States is relatively in isolation with respect to this issue of infant formula. Several other, you know, countries, the use of soy infant formula is really viewed as, you know, a sort of, you know, coin toss as to whether it's actually good or bad. Their perspective is a lot more biased towards, you know, admonition and caution than it is, oh, this is the healthiest thing you could possibly do for your kid. So that's a reality. The United States stands alone in its, you know, indifference to the potential downside of soy. That's a fact. Number two, in some countries, you can't get soy formula without a prescription.
That's how it, and bingo, thank you. Yeah. That's what I'm going for. Soy should be treated like a drug. That's what I was going for.
Look, it should at least be treated like cigarette packages.
For example,
it was known or suspected for a long time before it became common public, you know, knowledge and the government took action that cigarette smoking probably wasn't good for you. You know, that was known for a long time before anybody in the government actually said, ooh, you know what? Cigarette smoking isn't good for you. And we're going to make, you know, cigarette manufacturers put a warning to that effect on the package. And then you let the consumer do their own thing. Okay.
Informed
My
consent.
My deal would be if I was consent. In charge of this, yeah. I would basically say, yeah, let's put a similar nondescript, non-inflammatory, you know, admonition on soy formula and say, you know, existing animal and human data suggests the possibility that, you know, use of this product without a clear, no alternative, you know, reason for not using milk or something else should be considered, you know, with caution.
And frankly, why anyone, and I did look, and I'm sorry for not being more informed, there are quite a few whey-based formulas out there. But why anyone is not using whey and casein, you know, just dairy formulas is beyond me. Soy is not good for your children. Soy is not good for you. Stop eating it. Don't give it to your children. Turn to milk proteins. This is where you need to go. Don't believe all the propaganda about milk. It's all BS. At least
the American Academy of Pediatrics has discounted that. They published a very formal, you know, sort of position statement type thing on it in which they basically said, look, you know, soy-based formulas don't have any benefit whatsoever in terms of the usual suspects, you know, colic, irritable baby syndrome, all of these things that are commonly thought to occur with less frequency with soy than opposed to milk are absolutely not true. I mean, there are, you know, some legitimate recommendations that, you know, have to do with pre-existing medical conditions that are valid for, you know, the use of soy, but those are very specifically limited to the following. If your infant has hereditary conditions called galactosemia or hereditary lactase deficiency, both of which are not common at all, then you should use, you know, consider using soy because it is a relatively, you know, complete nutrient protein delivery, albeit inferior at every level to milk-based, but it's nonetheless, you know, a valid alternative. But if you don't have this galactosemia issue or hereditary lactase deficiency, then don't make up something that you have to use it because of this, that, or the other thing, which is categorically not true.
Right. I agree. And let's say one other thing. None of this was an issue before pasteurization because unpasteurized milk carries its own lactase in it. So that's another story. I can't get into that right now. Listen, Dr. Connolly, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I hope that this show goes around the internet 1,000 times and people get the message that soy is not good. Stop eating soy. Don't give it to your children unless, as Dr. Connolly puts it there, that you have no other alternative. Your baby will die unless they have something, and soy is the only alternative. There are lots of better alternatives. Don't do that to your child. Don't do it to yourself.
Just one concluding comment, Carl, because I tend to get into a lot of, you know, discussions about this at various levels on, you know, dairy versus soy. And, you know, one of the most profound, you know, perspectives I think, you know, someone needs to really embrace as, you know, a real consideration is, as you just said, Carl, in mammalian milk, which is secreted by over 4,000 mammal species on this planet and has been since the dawn of time, has the advantage in this particular catfight of having millions of years of evolutionary selection pressure, you know, behind it. The mammalian milk fluid across species is remarkably homogeneous, suggesting that they're at a baseline, some really high-powered, you know, generically beneficial components in mammalian milks. When you look at the genomic perspective of how organisms execute the Charles Darwin strategy of making themselves through succeeding generations ever more likely to survive to a viable reproductive age and then reproduce successfully to propagate their species. When you look at plants, you have to embrace the perspective that if plants follow that scheme, one of the things that they would need to basically, you know, insinuate into their genome over time would be self-defense mechanisms against being consumed by animal predators or microbial attack. You know, people don't realize that plants are as susceptible to microbial annihilation as humans are. And one of the interesting things is that there are theories out there in the, you know, evolution sort of related sciences that suggest that phytoestrogens are actually part of a heterogeneous group of compounds that have been evolved by plants to do one of two things. They either function as what are called phytoalexins, which are naturally produced chemical insecticides.
Right.
Antimicrobial.
Okay.
And there are similar compounds that are naturally occurring insecticides. And one of the theories that I find kind of humorous is that phytoestrogens actually might have made their way through evolutionary history because they were effective modulators of plant-eating animals' fertility and viability.
I love consuming
things that knock out your ability to reproduce, and you're a predator that is trying to eliminate plant life on the earth, the elaboration of such a compound would have very specific selection
Brilliant. I mean, they're anti, basically phytoestrogens are designed to be anti-nutrients. They're designed to be nature's pesticides to keep those plant-eating animals, including humans, from eating them because we would have ate them and we wouldn't have felt the way we normally do. We wouldn't have procreated. So they would have figured, hey, the plant is intelligent. It's going, you know what? You eat me and your species dies off and eventually you stop eating me because you're not here anymore.
Well, that's, I mean, obviously that's not known for a fact, but it's an interesting and humorous point of speculation.
I love it.
You could say, well, one of the ways that plants, you know, were staving off consumption by predators, you know, especially herbivorous predators, would be to, you know, produce compounds which limit their fecundity or their reproductive capacity.
And clearly soy was the most pissed off and had the least sense of humor because it has the highest degree of phytoestrogens and it didn't want to be consumed. So clearly that would fit the model there. Listen, Dr. Connolly, I want to thank you for coming on Superhuman Radio today. I also want to tell people that the Body RX show will be on this Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern. And you should listen to Body RX because that's where I get my intelligence from. Dr. C, thanks for coming on Superhuman Radio today.
You bet.
Okay. And I also want to thank Kenny Mattingly from Kenny's Cheese. Go to kennyscheese.com. Support artesian cheese manufacturers who use raw unpasteurized milk. And also check out greenpasture.org for their fermented cod liver oil. Use SHR as a coupon code. Get 10% off. This is the way cod liver oil was made back in biblical times. Check them out, greenpasture.org. We'll have another great show for you tomorrow, so tune in then.